You're listening to Going Places. I'm your host, Kara Orbell. I initially started this podcast to learn more about the ins and outs of travel. Eventually, I discovered there's so much more to a person than where they go. My goal is to learn more from people who are going places. I've interviewed community leaders, entrepreneurs, veterans, authors, and experts who tell fascinating stories and give amazing advice. Thanks for tuning in, and I can't wait to see where you go. Hi, thanks for tuning in. This is a really special episode. I talked to Greg Martin, who is a two-star general. He is an incredible mental health advocate, and he's now an author. His book, Bipolar General, My Forever War with Mental Illness, came out on September 15th, 2023. And in this podcast, we talk a lot about the book, his journey with mental health, and everything he's been up to. If you haven't tuned into our first interview, I highly recommend it. We dive into his story, his journey, all the way from when he joined the army, when he was growing up. And so I highly recommend you check that out. But I want to thank you for tuning in today as well. I want to mention, in case this is sensitive to anyone, but there is mention of mental health struggles, suicidal ideation, bipolar disorder, just to make sure that you are aware that this is in the episode. Greg is such an inspiring human being, and every time I talk to him, I feel so inspired and empowered and just proud to know him and know his story. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and I want to thank you for tuning in and hearing his story. Thanks for coming on, Greg.
My pleasure, Kara. I'm just really delighted to be with you.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk to you. It's been 2 years since our last interview, and so a lot has happened. You just had your book published, your book Bipolar General, and so that published on September 15th. I love it. That's awesome. How do you feel now that the book is out in the world?
I feel really good about it because it was the culmination of about 3 years of work. Mm-hmm. And but the biggest reason I feel good about it is it's going to make a difference. It's going to in people's lives, you know, because my mission is sharing my bipolar story to help stop the stigma, promote recovery, mm-hmm. and save lives. And I really believe it's going to do all three of those. So the more people who read it and talk about it and amplify the story, the better off we'll all be.
What has the response been already since the book has been published?
Well, it's been incredibly positive. The sales are very, very brisk. In fact, Amazon has apparently run out of books, you know, a few times. They've run out of their stock, so they've had to reorder more in order to meet the demand. Everybody that has talked to me, including yourself, you know, so dozens and dozens of people, including people I don't know at all, have gotten a hold of me and said, hey, I read your book. It's fantastic. It's really great. Super well written. Gonna save lives. Really important message. And they're talking it up among their friends. So I'm hoping that book clubs will really pick up on it. And I actually wrote an addendum that's designed to help guide book clubs, and mm-hmm. people can get that for free. It's either on my website or supposedly at the Amazon site. I have to double check that it's there. But so I think it's going really, really well. And my big book launch is the last couple of weeks since the book came out. I've been really busy with interviews, podcasts, and so forth. But the really big book launch is next week in Washington, D.C. The Association of the U.S. Army is doing a huge convention with a book program, and they co-published the book along with the Navy Institute. Mm-hmm. And so they're predicting, you know, over 30,000 people will come through the convention and come to the book area. So I'm thinking that's going to be a really big, and it goes for 3 full days. So I think that's going to be a real, you know, surge in interest in books.
That's incredible. Were you expecting such a big surge in people reading it and sharing about it?
Well, I knew about the AUSA, the Army Convention. I knew all about that. I knew that I would have lots of interviews and podcasts, and I've got, many, many more in the months to come, and talks to all different kinds of people. But I didn't know it was going to be this big. I didn't know people were going to be this interested and motivated and fired up, and that they would be sending me notes saying how great the book is and how much they love it, and they're going to give one to a friend or a colleague or somebody, a family member. The other thing that's been a very big surprise is the response of the professional medical community. Karen, it's unbelievable. I've been invited. I was in I had already spoken at a number of hospitals in the past, but I was the keynote speaker at this global international conference on bipolar disorder that was held in Chicago back in June. And it was 700 of the world's leaders on bipolar research, doctors, scientists. So I gave the keynote. And so 700 experts heard my talk. And so I've gotten dozens of requests to speak at their hospitals, their med schools, to do what they call grand rounds, which is basically giving a talk to all the people, all the medical people. In fact, I had one professor who really has embraced me. Her name is Alex Liao, and I'm going to give her a shout out. She's a researcher and a med school professor at University of Illinois, Chicago. And so she read the book like in, just a couple of 2, 3 days, read the whole book, already is using it in her to teach her med school classes of psychiatrists. Then she had me be a visiting lecturer, which I'm going to do again in several weeks. She set up two podcasts with the University of Illinois,
Oh
and
my
then I'm going to
gosh.
do a grand rounds in the spring. And she invited me to be an advisor on BioFect, which is this little high-tech startup that she founded using high-tech solutions to understand and recover from and basically treat bipolar disorder. So, I mean, I give her as an example, but there are many, many others. But she's kind of the most who's come up with the most ideas. But this idea that the professional medical community, they embrace somebody like me because they call me an expert by lived experience. So they don't want just a regular doctor or psychiatrist. They want people as well to team with them who have lived experience. So that's super exciting and really a great step forward, I think, for bipolar research and, healing.
That's incredible. I know that your book is the first of its time for veterans, but it's so cool that the medical community has picked it up as well, and just it's exploding everywhere, which is incredible.
It really is. And so I'm really excited, and I just keep on doing, relatively small to medium events. I haven't had any big home runs. Like I haven't been on, I don't have 60 Minutes or Joe Rogan or Fox News or CNN or Oprah. I don't have anything like that yet. But what I'm thinking is going to happen is as I kind of work from the bottom up, from the ground up, that it's going to take on a snowball effect, and these bigger media outlets will pay attention.
Oh yeah. I agree. And you're putting it out there. Now it's out there, so it has to happen.
Right.
That's so exciting. I want to talk about your book and the writing process, but I also want to talk about bipolar disorder. So in our first interview, we dove into your background, your entire story. Has there been any new updates as you've been writing your book? You've been discovering new things about your hyperthymia, your manic episodes, a little bit more into the depression. Have you learned anything new?
I have. And I've learned it by reading, listening to experts talk about it at the conference I went to from people like Professor Liao. And so here's some of the things that I learned. And I worked very closely with Professor Nasir Gaymi, who teaches med school at Tufts and Harvard. In
Yep.
fact, he went through the whole book and verified the medical psychiatric accuracy. So, I mean, he's one of the leading, most famous psychiatrists in the world, and he did it. And by the way, he did the whole thing for nothing. He didn't charge me a penny,
Wow.
which is really very, very generous for someone of his stature. But some
Yeah.
of the things that I've learned are, first off, that you don't turn on a switch and all of a sudden you go from you're not bipolar to suddenly you're bipolar. Doesn't happen that way. It's a gradual glide path, or what we call it is the bipolar spectrum. And so I essentially was on that spectrum probably from my teenage years on. I was born with a bipolar brain. I had the bipolar gene, and it just grew and grew and grew for decades until finally my bipolar onset occurred in 2003 in the Iraq War. I learned a new theory from Professor Liao. It's called the kindling theory. It's very interesting.
Interesting.
And what the theory says is that bipolar disorder kind of grows in the same way you would start a fire. So when you want to start a fire, you put in little twigs and then medium twigs and then big twigs and then little sticks, medium sticks, big sticks, and then little logs. Okay. And finally, over time, the fire builds up. And in my case, it went into full-blown mania in 2014, where it was a bonfire. But what these kindling effects are bipolar-like events and symptoms. So I actually started having bipolar, low-level little twigs as far back as high school, where I was, super excited, super energetic, tons of drive. And so, like in high school, when I was kind of like, the all-star student athlete leader, it was already building at a low level. Then West Point was more intense, Ranger School more intense. Then my time in the Army, I was on, I was super, pumped up, excited, enthusiastic, stressed. And it just kept growing little by little until by probably about the late 90s, early 2000s, when I was in my mid 40s, I was probably just below the threshold of actually having bipolar disorder. And then the experience, the thrill, euphoria, stress, trauma of combat in Iraq, that triggered my genetic predisposition. And then that was the onset of my actual bipolar disorder. So that's something new that I learned recently. And you read about it in the book, this idea called hyperthymia. I really learned about that from Professor Gamey, who is really my, close advisor. And hyperthymia is not a mental illness, but it is a mood, it's a mood type. So I had hyperthymia, for which I'm thankful, because it gave me, it was basically a low level continuous mania, which gave me extra dopamine and other chemicals that elevated and boosted my performance for years. And so that's good until it goes too high, and then it goes into real mania, which happened with me. So I learned about hyperthymia from him. And there's a few other things, but those are probably the two biggest ones.
Is it interesting when you were writing your book that you had to kind of relive all of those experiences with the lens of knowing that you had bipolar disorder and it was genetic and it was in your mind kind of the whole time?
Yeah, it was a really fascinating experience. And I was giving drafts of it to my wife and sons and other close friends to read along the way. And they would say, "Hey, you forgot about this event or that event." And so it was very interesting. As I wrote, I was studying and doing research and learning. So, I mean, there is a lot in the book about, the science of bipolar disorder. But it was overall, I would say there were periods where it was difficult because some of the episodes were so bizarre, so crazy, so unhappy, frightening, that some of it was painful. On the other hand, some of the mania was really happy, exciting. It was exuberant, and that was kind of fun, sort of reliving, being on the most powerful chemical drug high in the world. But I would say overall, it was cathartic, therapeutic, helped me in my recovery by getting it all out there. And then as I gave drafts to people to read, we had great discussions. So a lot of my friends, mostly in Cocoa Beach, they would read a draft and ask me tons of really good questions that would make me think harder and rewrite things and make it better. So it was really overall a very positive experience.
That's incredible. That's so cool too that you use your community and your family to keep pushing you forward and learning new things about your writing journey. I think that's such an incredible part of your story. Let's talk a little bit about your family. You talked about how your relationships at this time was your safety net, and I loved the fact that you included testimonials from your wife and your sons in the book. What was it like having them write for the book?
I thought it was really cool. I thought it would be an important part of the book. I also had more in there, and I had more friends who wrote things about me, but the editor, cut some of that out because he was driven to cut the size of the manuscript in half, and he was ruthless about cutting it down. And that made it a better book because the manuscript was too long. There was lots and lots of good stuff, but it was too long. And so I asked friends and family members to write what was the experience like for them. And I got to read it and talk about it with them. I thought it was really awesome that they all agreed to write their part. And I think it provides a valuable perspective that somebody with bipolar disorder, not only does it disrupt and affect their own life as the one with the disease, it affects and disrupts, other family members, spouse. And so I thought it was really valuable. I'm glad they did it, and I think it added a good bit.
I loved Maggie's part, your wife, at the end. I thought that was the most powerful part because I was waiting for her experience to come in, like her testimonial. And I was like, oh, I just want to hear what she's thinking throughout all of this. So the fact that you included her perspective was so powerful.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was such a great book. And I loved your writing style. How did you learn how to write? Did you just practice and write a lot of journals, or how did you develop your writing style?
Well, I would say I was probably not a bad writer in high school. So I was kind of lucky that I sort of had that talent. And then I went to University of Maine for 1 year, and I took, basic freshman English, and it was a good course. It was nothing fancy, but it was just how to write sentences, how to write paragraphs, how to write short stories, and that helped me a lot. And then I went to West Point. Well, West Point has a fantastic writing program, and I took, you take to pr practically every single semester have some kind of intense writing course. You take 2 semesters of English as a freshman, and they just really drill into you how to write in a good, clear, action-packed way. And that stuck with me. And then we took, history, where you had to apply the writing, psychology, philosophy, and other courses where you were constantly writing. And then in the Army, same thing. And they have a course in the Army. It's called the Army Writing Style. And it's more of the same. It's just direct action verbs, get rid of the passive stuff. Shorter is better. Shorter words are better than longer words. And so that just became ingrained in me, and I just kept doing it my whole life. And so, a few years ago, when I sat down to do the manuscript, all that just kind of flowed out. And then I did, many, many revisions, both on my own, and then once I had a publisher working with the editors, We revised that thing over and over again. And,
Wow.
the Naval Institute Press was very, very good at, revising and making the manuscript into a good book.
That's awesome. What is your favorite part of the book?
Oh boy, my favorite part of the book. Well, the most exciting part of, my time in the Army, and probably the most exciting part of the book to me, was the Iraq War experience. It was just, it was so intense, and it's what, you train for and you learn and you practice for a whole career. So I think that was kind of, probably the most exhilarating and euphoric part of the book, exciting. But there were also some bad memories in there. Some really, really bad memories. I loved my time as the commander of the 5th Engineer Battalion. That was 97 to 99, where I had those two bosses. One of them was a complete psycho, madman, wild. And he led through fear, intimidation, and but I grew to really respect him and like him because he did so much good for me personally and professionally and for our unit. He made us better, but every step of the way was pain. And so it was kind of fun writing about that, but also painful. And then I contrasted him with the other colonel, Dempsey, the cavalry commander, who was the best. I mean, he was the best leader ever. And so I really liked writing that chapter, the compare and contrast of those two guys. I had a lot of fun remembering the wonderful, joyful, happy life I had as a junior officer in Germany, where we worked hard, we played hard, we traveled, I met Maggie, we went skiing, we did all kinds of fun stuff. So it was very intense army stuff, but it was also very intense recreation, play, travel, culture, adventure. So I would say that was probably the happiest, most fun part of the book. And people ask, what assignment did you like the best? It was probably those years as a junior officer stationed in Germany.
What was the hardest part of the book to write?
I think the hardest part was d going through bipolar hell, where, I came off of the really sky-high mania in 2014. So I came off the mania, I was fired, I was forced to retire. And then I went into horrible depression. And then I had 2 years of bipolar hell where I was horribly, cripplingly depressed, just awful, and terrifying psychosis where I was just constantly thinking about death and dying, wanted to die. And that went on for 2 whole years. I mean, that was horrible. It was absolutely awful. I think that was the by far the worst part of my entire life. And it was the worst, hardest part to write about because it was just so painful and terrifying.
Was it triggering when you were revisiting those that part of your life?
It didn't actually trigger me. It was kind of a downer, and I was able to, it was surprising to me how bad I really was. Because at first I didn't have that much detail in that piece of the book, which I call Bipolar Hell. Didn't have that much detail, but as I farmed it out to Maggie, Sons, and others to read, then they reminded me of, oh, remember this, remember that. And so I started putting more and more of the details of the various episodes in there. I wouldn't say it triggered me in any way. My triggers have been more, because of my type of bipolar disorder, which is type one, and that I'm more mania than depression.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
My most of my triggers are things that either really agitate or anger me, and then I
Mm-hmm.
can go into a state of angry hypomania. Or they make me super happy, like dancing and singing karaoke, and then I rise up into low-level mania. So those are really the two major triggers that I have.
Yeah.
But I've also got some triggers where I had a panic attack about a year and a half ago, and that was a terrible event. And it was because I had these delusions that I was being abandoned by my family and friends, and we were in France. And so I thought everybody had left, and I went into a kind of a panic attack. Luckily, that didn't turn into a bipolar relapse. I had another time when it was during the American withdrawal, the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, and this friend of mine was really, really upset. She had bipolar disorder as well, and she started really attacking me over the chaotic withdrawal and pushing me that I should publicly condemn the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, both of whom I know and have served with. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I mean, these guys didn't create this thing. They inherited a bad situation, and they did the best they could under horrible circumstances. So no, I'm not going to. And she just kept attacking me. And then
My gosh.
flashed back me back into Iraq. Remember I told you how the bad decisions, like not enough troops to secure the borders, they disbanded the Iraqi army, they did deep de-Ba'athification. So we created the insurgency, which then killed thousands of Americans through bad American policy. So I went suddenly into this terrible flashback of Iraq. And I mean, I was on the floor, I was totally shook
Oh
up.
my
And the way
gosh.
I came out of it was, my phone was on ring, and I heard it ring, and I looked at it, and it was a really dear friend. And I looked and I saw they had texted me like a really nice, kind, encouraging note. And like all of a sudden, I came out of the PTSD attack. I was still very shook up for about 24 hours. So those were two. I had a third one where someone I thought was my friend, really attacked me for my bipolar disorder, saying that I've hurt and damaged lots of people, and that I should pay people monetary damages for the harm I've done them. And that
Oh
just
my
came out
gosh.
of nowhere. That was like, just where did that come from? And so that sent me into a very bad state of agitation and anger that lasted quite a long time. But luckily, I was able to sort of level out, pull out of it, and again, thankfully, no relapse.
And it's good that you have the support and you're able to recognize the friendships and relationships you had to let go of versus the people who support you throughout this experience.
Right. Yeah, that's having a network of supporters is really, really important. In the civilian world, they call it a peer support network, which is a great term. So have people who are your peers, who know you, who you trust, who are trained to identify the symptoms, they know your history. And I've got a bunch of people like that in Cocoa Beach that I've told, hey, here's the story. I have bipolar disorder. Here are some of the symptoms. Keep an eye on me. If you see the following things, talk to me and Maggie. And then I've got, my family are really good. And then in the military, they call the same thing a battle buddy system. And so, like, Maggie's my best battle buddy who really keeps me straight. And yeah, so that's really good.
That's awesome. I think you called it, was it the Broken Brain Club from our
Yeah.
last conversation?
Yes.
That's
Yeah.
awesome. That's so
Yeah.
cool. How's Cocoa Beach? Give me a quick update.
Oh, it is so cool. I love Cocoa Beach. I mean, Cocoa Beach is happy, it's friendly, it's positive energy, it's exciting. The summer was pretty hot, and but you get used to it and how to deal with it. And now the weather, once you hit October, it's like you turn the thermostat down, and you start feeling a little bit of coolness in the morning. And before you know it, the weather's going to be perfect. Just perfect weather. In the 70s, no humidity, bright sunshine, just wonderful. That's coming soon.
Yeah, that's such an interesting part of your story too, like your location and how moving to Cocoa Beach was such an important part of your healing journey, because you wouldn't expect that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I talk about the five Ps, in terms of recovery, so the recovery needs to be built on, number one, you have to get your brain chemistry in balance. So for me, that's medicine. And for most people, it is. Number two, therapy. Very important to have a trained therapist to talk to and help you understand yourself and situations you might be in. Third is healthy living. Good diet, exercise, plenty of sleep, low stress. And then comes the five P's. First is purpose. You got to have a purpose that drives and motivates you, that's bigger than yourself and inspires you. And mine is my mission, sharing my bipolar story. Second, you need to live in a place that gives you the enables you to do the things you want to do with the people you want to do it with, and that makes you happy and energizes you. And for me, Cocoa Beach is great. And then third is people. You need to surround yourself with people who are fun, happy, energetic, positive. And I've got a great circle of friends here. And then the fourth P is perseverance. And interestingly, that was Maggie's key word. But perseverance, having the will to win, never give up, keep moving forward. Because recovery from mental illness is hard work. And so when you hit a bump in the road, you get knocked down, you have a setback, you got to just keep going. And then fifth is presence, having the ability in your own mind to step out of your own thinking and think about your own thinking. And the reason that's so important is because a lot of times we're prisoners of our own thoughts. We have thoughts that are not true, they're erroneous, they lead us astray. So that's where presence comes in, to be able to think about our own thinking and make better sense of it, and thus make better decisions.
I like that. How do you hone in on your presence? Because I know it's very hard to think about your own thoughts.
Well, great question. I think some of the things that you are great at, like yoga, meditation, mindfulness, are very, very good practices that can help with that a
Thank
lot.
you.
I have gotten so busy that
Yeah.
I unfortunately have stopped doing some of these really good practices. But the way I apply the presence is I try to think every day about, who am I? Where am I? What am I trying to do? What's my purpose in life? Who am I dealing with? And how can I be a good person and encourage them and have a, a positive frame of mind? And then an example on how that helps me is, so I had really serious paranoid delusions that people were out to get me, wanted to see me get fired, arrested, put in jail, lose all my pay. And so I haven't had any really bad paranoid delusions, but occasionally I get little seedlings, like just a little seedling will come up and I'll start thinking, oh, so and so doesn't like me. They're out to get me. They want to hurt me. And through presence, I can say, Greg, stop. That's not true. That person does not dislike you. They have nothing against you. They're not trying to hurt you. In fact, they're probably thinking about something totally different than you. They're probably thinking about themselves. And so, I mean, it sounds simple, but it's able to tamp down those bad little seedlings that, if they weren't tamped down, could begin to grow into something, bad.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How are you managing your crazy busy life now that you have all of your podcasts and your events that you're going to?
Well, I didn't do a very good job the last 2 weeks because over a period of a couple months, I had scheduled back to back to back interviews, podcasts, things like that. I just and I my days the last 2 weeks were completely packed, and it was a lot. And I mean, I did well. I didn't lose my voice. I came close. And I said, okay, I have to thin out my schedule.
Yeah.
If I've got a couple events already in a day, probably that's enough, and I
Yeah.
don't need to schedule more. Maybe a phone call for a
Yeah.
third event, but not three, four, five speaking events, which I did the last 2 weeks. And so I'm thinning
Wow.
out my schedule. I'm trying to do video like Zoom wherever I can. So when I
Okay.
talk to people, I always ask them, hey, can we do this by Zoom? You
Okay.
know, can we do that? And if they say yes, then I do it by Zoom. Some people say, no, we really want you to come. And so then I have to decide, do I really want to go through the stress and the work of traveling to
Yeah.
somewhere? And I've said yes to a lot of places. I've said no to a few places. Then I've gotten really good. I never used to charge a penny for anything I did, but a lot of people have told me, hey, you need for your own good and the good of your family, you should ask, you know, hey, what kind of fee do you offer? And so
Yeah.
I'm asking now. I'm just asking. And then we have a dialogue about that. So more people are paying me now than in the past, which is a good thing. I
Yeah.
also asked people, would you consider purchasing some of the books,
Yeah.
which is a good move. And then I asked them if, hey, would you consider, if you like the book and the story, would you consider writing a review on Amazon and other venues that you frequent? And
Yeah.
so I'm becoming more assertive, I guess,
Good.
without being greedy or too pushy. I mean, I do
Yeah.
it in a really nice way, but I think that's a step forward.
Yeah.
And I've got stuff now where I'm pretty busy all the way through November.
Wow.
I've got a bunch in December, a bunch in January, a bunch in February. Then I've got stuff in April and May and next August.
Huh.
So I've still got plenty of white space to put things in,
Okay.
out into the winter and the spring and the summer.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just pace myself. And I figure
Good.
this is going to be a 2 or a 3 year journey at least with the book.
Yeah. It's so exciting to see the journey that you're on, though, because even during our conversation 2 years ago, like you were on such a different path, I feel like, because the manuscript was just out, but the book hadn't been published. I don't think you had a publisher yet. So to see the
Correct.
strides you've made in 2 years is incredible. Like by the next 2 years, you're probably going to be on the biggest news sources and you're going to be like a household name probably.
Well, I mean, that's a great problem to have, but
Yeah.
with it will come challenges.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's a good thing. And again, I go back to, I mean, the reason I wrote the book really fundamentally is to help people. I
Yeah.
mean, helping people through, I mean, I had a very terrible, intense experience with bipolar disorder that literally upended my life and my family's life. And
Yeah.
so I feel like I owe it to people to share that story. What good is that terrible, tragic events? What good is it if I keep it to myself and I don't tell anybody? And loads and loads, I mean, probably thousands upon thousands of high-level business executives, high-level government execs, military people, entertainment, showbiz, sports,
Yeah.
they have the same thing that I had. It happens to thousands of people. But what happens is they quietly retire, they quietly go away, and they, for the most part, don't say anything because of the stigma, and they're
Yeah.
ashamed or embarrassed, which is crazy. You shouldn't be ashamed or embarrassed for a mental illness because
Yeah.
it's just as physiologically real as diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and there's no stigma for that. So
Yeah.
I have no stigma. I don't feel any stigma. I'm actually grateful and proud that I was able to come back from this disease, and now
Yeah.
I'm thriving. So that's why I wrote it. That's what I want to see happen.
That's so exciting. And that's so cool that you're just living out your mission in such an authentic way. Did it take a while to unlearn the stigma, or were you always like that? being vulnerable?
Well, I would say when I got my diagnosis in November of 2014, I was in really bad depression. Everybody, for the most part, knew I had been fired from the job. I was being forced to retire, that I was in a state of terrible depression, that I could barely, go to work. And so people in the military that were around me, they all knew. And so once I got my diagnosis, I openly told them, I said, "Hey, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder." And they took it fine. Nobody said, "Whoa, that's really weird." Nobody did at all. And so then, I told everybody. I told my, extended family. I told my friends. I told military people. I pretty much told everybody I knew. And then I went into that bipolar hell, where I really wasn't around many people for almost 2 years because I was so secluded, withdrawn from people, because that's the nature of depression. But then once I started coming out of the depression 7 years ago, and then moved to Cocoa Beach, I pretty much started telling people. And the funny thing is, here's how it started in Cocoa Beach. People would see, we'd be at the gym, and then after workout classes, whatever, people would come out and they'd see my license plate. And I have a VA license plate that says disabled veteran. And so people would say, "Hey, Martino," which is my nickname. They'd say, "Martino, what's your disability?" And I told them, "Well, I have a brain thing." And they said, "Oh, what's your brain thing?" And I'd say, "Bipolar disorder." And they'd say, "Well, I have a brain thing too." Or my husband or wife or son or daughter or friend. And literally, this happened dozens of times. And people, it turns out that every single person I talk to, either they have a brain thing, or someone, friend, family, work colleague, has some kind of brain thing, brain disorder. And so then we would start talking about it. And then they would want to know more, like, what's bipolar disorder like? And I'd tell them all about it. And then people started texting me and writing me emails. And then I would answer them back. And that string of emails and text messages became the first little mini micro draft of my book. And then it just, then I started getting invitations to speak, like at churches, retreats, rotary clubs. And then I started writing the manuscript. So I would say I have been really fortunate and somewhat blessed that I never have been weighed down with stigma, or what they call self-stigma, where you turn the stigma on yourself. I've just never had that problem, because I know it's physically real, that it's a disease of the brain. It's an illness. And what it does is that it causes the brain to do its own thing in terms of shooting into mania and then falling into depression. That's what the inner workings of a sick brain do on their own, without anything to do with my desire or willpower. So I just figured, hey, it's a physical thing. It's my brain. Well, why should I feel
It's a
bad
brain
about
thing. I love that. I love the
it?
power of conversation too. And that's why your story has stuck with me. Like, as you know, I did a talk about our first podcast interview and how we may be different. Like, I was a college student when I interviewed you for the first time, but I related so much to your story, and you were so vulnerable, and that left such a powerful impact on me and so many people. So I want to thank you for that, because that was incredible.
You're totally welcome. My pleasure. I'm glad you came back to me.
It's incredible. What you're doing is leaving such a powerful impact on so many people, and it's so powerful.
And you're going to help amplify it through this podcast, which I really appreciate.
Thanks. It's an honor being able to talk to you and share your story and learn more about your journey, which I feel like continues to develop every day.
It really, really does. In this connection I've got with the medical professionals, I'm learning so much. I mean, Professor Liao sends me a paper every other day to read, and then I can ask questions. She appointed me to serve as an advisor to the board of her little high-tech startup company called BioFact, which I'm going to learn a ton from. She, I mean, asks me really smart, penetrating questions about the story, my story. And so I just keep learning more and more because I've got this network of super smart medical professionals. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's so cool. Could you see yourself teaching again or like being involved with med school students?
I would love to, so I've already done one visiting lecture to her med school class. Yeah, I didn't mention it. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned it or not. She is using the book in her class for
Yeah.
medical students. We're doing two podcasts. One I did alone for University of Illinois. The other's got her, the professor, asking me the ex lived experience guy questions. She's using the book in her class. I gave a lecture to her class a couple weeks ago. I'm going to give another lecture in a couple weeks, and then I'm going to give a lecture in May.
Wow.
So yeah, so I mean, I really am teaching, and then I'm doing similar stuff with dozens of other med schools and hospitals.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I really am getting back into the teaching mode, which is
Yeah.
really a lot of fun.
That's so exciting. I love that you're the lived experience guy. I think that's so cool.
And the students are they are really, the feedback from the students is just through the roof. They're like, they really get a lot out of it. They're really excited. They want to have me back, et cetera. So it's yeah, that's good
Yeah.
feedback from teaching.
Wow. Huh. Maybe that's what you're gonna do next. Who knows?
I would love that.
Yeah. So, okay, we talked 2 years ago, last June 2021. We talked now. What are your goals 2 years from now in the future?
So I think over the next 2 years, I am going to be consumed with kind of marketing, publicizing the book, and
Yeah.
all that goes with it. I mean, like, just as an example, I've got three National Public Radio reporters that are going to do stories on it. Three
Wow.
over the next few months. There's been loads of book reviews, tons of podcasts, other interviews, loads of speaking engagements. I mean, dozens and dozens. It'll probably end up being hundreds of speaking engagements. And so I think that's going to consume me for at least this year,
Wow.
probably next year. And then if I end up getting some of the big media hits, that'll probably continue to consume me for maybe even another year. Beyond that, I think I'm going to keep talking about, speaking about, lecturing, doing visits, doing podcasts on the book. There's so many podcasts, and I say yes to every single one. And there's
Oh.
so many people that want to do interviews. I say
Yeah.
yes to every single one. And so
Wow.
if I just keep saying yes, and that's going to fill my calendar for a year, 2, 3 years. The other thing I'm doing is I'm working LinkedIn very, very hard.
Yep.
And so from the bottom up, I'm generating this snowball effect. So I guess in 2 years, what I really think is going to be going on is more of the same, probably more of the same, with probably even more talks to military audiences, veteran audiences, and medical, hospital, med school, audiences. So I think that's what's probably going to happen. And
Wow.
the book, it'll hopefully there'll be additional printings of the book, and then I can put in some new stuff that I've learned since it was originally published. And that would be pretty cool. So I think
Yeah.
I'd say, Kara, I'm probably going to be doing much of the same over the next some
Yeah.
2 years and beyond.
That's so exciting, though. Wow. How cool. It's so cool to see you again and just see the adventures you're on now and everything that you're doing is so amazing.
Well, thank you. And it's great
Yeah.
to see you. And
Yes.
I would love to hear more about what you're doing and what's going on in your life.
Thank you. Okay, I have one more question. If you were to give your book to anyone and have them read it, who would it be?
I think it would probably be either Joe Rogan or Oprah Winfrey. And the reason is both of them are super smart. They're really passionate. They're interested in human stories of moving from triumph or from tragedy to triumph. And they have such a network or an audience that listen to them, it would then open up the book, the visibility of the book to millions of people. And I'm not looking for millions of people to, just to sell books and make money. I'm looking for millions of people to help save lives. And so that would be my desire.
I have chills. I hope that happens. I think it will.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much for coming back on the podcast. It was great to see you.
Well, it's great to see you, Karen. Thanks for all your great work. You're really making a difference with this
Thank you.
podcast.
That was my interview with Greg Martin. Thank you so much for tuning in to our second conversation. It was so good to hear just how many amazing things he's been up to since his book was published and all of the amazing work he is doing for mental health advocacy. If you liked this interview, I highly encourage you to check out our first conversation. That is linked in the show notes. And please, please, please buy his book. It's amazing. I read it in a day and I loved every second of it. He's such a great writer, and I am honored to have interviewed him before and after his book. Thanks for tuning in, and I can't wait to see where you go. Bye.